Traditionally, the human body is said to have five senses, a sense being one of the physiological capacities of an organism that provides data for perception. Blindness is the condition that results when the physiological capacity to collect and transmit images of visible light to the brain for interpretation fails to function. To state the obvious, without this failure, there would be no blind people facing problems caused by blindness. Far less obvious is something else about the failure of this particular physiological capacity to work properly, and that is this. Of the problems faced by blind people, those caused by the inability to receive and process data by visual means are minimal in comparison to those caused by the whole historical, cultural, and social complex of fear and myth surrounding blindness. In a very real sense, the history of the National Federation of the Blind is the story of the journey of a people toward an ever deeper recognition of the fundamental nature of problems caused by blindness, coupled with an ever clearer articulation of those problems. This essay is an attempt to extract from the story of that journey, the comprehensive and tangible subject matter of this book, a limited subset of items for particular attention, which, in the opinion of this writer, provide a framework from which the larger story emerges. As credentials for the task, the writer claims the opportunity to have observed the unfolding of the journey at close hand during the past 50 years. Some thoughts about another historical happening overlapping the period of the beginnings of the Federation are instructive. As the 19th century came to a close and the new century dawned, strange things began to happen in the scientific community. The capacity to make increasingly minute observations of physical phenomena became possible, and those observations ceased to be in accord with long-established theories of physical reality. The most brilliant minds in the field were confronted with the needs to abandon a familiar and comfortable belief system regarding the very nature of the structure of matter in favor of a radically counterintuitive new way of describing reality. Today, the terms particle physics and quantum mechanics are relatively familiar in popular culture. Less familiar is the controversy that led to their becoming so. Even the great Albert Einstein was, for a time, an outspoken opponent of the young Werner Heisenberg's uncertainty principle, eventually giving it his grudging acceptance. Not only were whole new thought processes demanded, but an entirely new set of tools had to be developed before the new realities of the physical structure of the world could begin to be unlocked. Until there was an understanding of the new concepts, the mathematics to further them could not be conceived or created. It takes no real stretch of the imagination to grasp the analogies between the emergence of the new physics of the 20th century and the emergence of a new paradigm of blindness during roughly the same time period. When old belief systems ceased to be in accord with observed reality, the move to abandon the outdated in favor of the true is inevitable. The success of such moves, however, is not inevitable. The unraveling of classical physics came about because of a fundamental error in the model describing the nature of matter. The unraveling of the old paradigm of blindness is coming about because of an equally fundamental error in the model describing the nature of blindness. Likewise, new thought processes are demanded, and new tools must be conceived and created. To make the quantum leap, the world at large had in its midst, at precisely the right time, the passion and giant intellects of a handful of brilliant scientists and mathematicians. Max Planck, Albert Einstein, Niels Bohr, Paul Dirac, Werner Heisenberg, and Erwin Schrödinger among them. When the time came for our quantum leap, that need to abandon the belief system that proclaimed blindness to be a static, unmitigated, and forever unchangeable tragedy, our field was no less fortunate in its early leaders. To passion and towering intellect, Newell Perry, Jacobus Tenbroek, and Kenneth Jernigan added another indispensable attribute, an unquenchable faith in the capacity of blind people to work together with love so that all might achieve their dreams. If one is convinced that the whole historical, cultural, and social complex of fear and myth surrounding blindness is the prime factor that traps blind individuals in blighted lives, where does one start? This was the problem facing Jacobus Tenbroek and his mentor Newell Perry in 1940. A natural starting place might be to band together with other blind people who believe as you do. But if these beliefs are so embedded in history, culture, and society, isn't it likely that most blind people, being products of that history, culture, and society, will be equally mired in those same fears and myths? Indeed, this was largely so, but with a crucial beginning. As our society is structured, blindness is not a characteristic that selects for success. In the early days of the Federation, resources were few. Unemployment of blind persons approached 100%. For those few who held jobs, what today would be termed underemployment was nearly universal. Self-esteem among blind people was virtually non-existent. How could it be otherwise in a culture shrouded in superstition at worst and in ignorance at best? Any reasonably rational assessments of the prospects for the Federation would conclude that it should not have been able, in a mere three-quarters of a century, to bring fundamental change to a paradigm of blindness that had taken millennia to construct. Yet that is exactly what the National Federation of the Blind has accomplished. And the question is why? There are those, this writer among them, who sense that at least a partial explanation is that deep within the Federation resides what, for lack of a better term, may be called a collective heart. Not merely metaphorical or symbolic, the collective heart appears to function as an organ of perception and action that has been awakened through persistent, conscious effort, an organ that possesses the capacity to establish the communal ability to live beyond conditioned thought patterns and to call into being focused energy of enormous magnitude. However it may have come about, and through whatever methods it is sustained, perhaps the intensifying effect of generations of common experiences and memories, it has, for those who acknowledge sensing it, a very definite reality. In the inner depths of the Federation, there is a shared understanding that all blindness is one. By this is meant the concept that no blind person is unaffected by the blight inflicted on any other blind person resulting from the fundamental errors in society's concept of the nature of blindness. From this idea flows the notion that no one makes it on his or her own, that no one is fully free until all are free, that the payment of subminimum wages to any blind person is degrading to all blind people, that participation in the work of the Federation by the successful blind person is not merely an act of charity to those less fortunate, but is important to his or her own well-being, and a host of other similarly compelling reasons to make the Federation a priority in one's life. Leadership in the Federation is conferred as a sacred trust. The leadership of any individual who fails to hold it as such is short-lived. From those leaders who hold the trust, much is expected. In return, much is given. Beginning at the top and flowing through the ranks, the nurturing of the next generation of leaders is regarded as the responsibility of all. It is not casual, and it is not an afterthought. This is so at all levels of the organization, local, state, and national. The resultant unbroken line of leadership of outstanding caliber would seem to confirm that the native capacity of our leaders is enhanced by an energetic infusion from the collective heart of the Federation. To serve as a corrective to the reams of psychobabble, pseudoscientific drivel, self-serving, peer-reviewed journal articles, and condescending custodial pronouncements that have proliferated in the 20th and 21st centuries, as well as the shortcomings of dramatic portrayals of blindness throughout history, the Federation began to create a written body of literature espousing a very different philosophy regarding the nature of blindness. In 1963, Kenneth Jernigan, with intellectual rigor and clarity, first set forth a radically counterintuitive statement about the fundamental nature of blindness. Distilled from the lived experience of blind individuals, his own and that of thousands of others, that statement argued a premise that was startlingly simple, yet almost entirely beyond the grasp of the mind of society, steeped as it was and is in the archetypal fears and myths surrounding blindness. Stated simply, that premise is that blindness is merely one of the thousands of attributes that define an individual, that blindness does not, in and of itself, limit an individual in ways that are more significant than those imposed by the combination of other characteristics that comprise an individual. Beliefs about the truth or falsity of this premise determine entirely for an individual, for an organization, and for a society, how the problem of blindness should be handled. If one believes the premise to be true, then one's focus is on determining the specific limitations posed by the physiological inability to collect and transmit images of visible light to the brain, and one's actions are directed toward dealing with those limitations. On the other hand, if one believes that the physiological frequently are solved when tackled inside a space that operates rationally, outside this environment, society's methods of dealing with blindness tend to be emotionally driven and irrational. In large measure, they create the conditions that have brought blighted lives to generations of blind individuals. Following are four principal recognitions that form the operative underpinnings of the environment in which blindness can cease to be the characteristic that defines the future of individuals who are blind. They are a recognition that lack of access to information is the primary objective problem caused by blindness, and that emotionally created phantom problems are the primary obstacles to solving the objective problems. A recognition that blind individuals' notions about blindness have been formed in the general milieu of society and that gentle guidance and support are necessary to reverse the damage. Local chapter meetings, state and national conventions, outreach to parents and teachers of blind children, informal sharing of experiences, and training based on the lived experience of successful blind individuals are primary avenues of reversal. A recognition that a vast number of the tools and systems in use in the world have been constructed to meet the needs and preferences of its predominantly sighted population, and that this virtually universal practice has engendered conflation of the inherent nature of information with its visual presentation. This conflation leads to the flawed assumption that the transmission of information is inherently visual. For example, it is ironic that the invention that revolutionized long-distance communication nearly 200 years ago relied on converting electrical signals, which are inherently neither visual nor audible, to audible clicks via Morse code. The audible information was then back-translated into print letters to make the audible electromagnetic information more easily intelligible to the sighted, and to preserve a permanent record of the transmitted information. Had the back translation of the audible signal, which in that form was equally accessible to blind and sighted individuals, been into Braille to make it more easily intelligible to the blind and to preserve a permanent record of the transmission, it would have been regarded as an accommodation to the blind. The parallel accommodation to the sighted that actually took place was such a normally expected action that it was not even noted as an accommodation. The implications of the conflation phenomenon, as illustrated by this example, repeated daily in tens of thousands of circumstances and situations, cannot be overstated. And finally, a recognition that certain words used in matters relating to blindness have connotations that create and perpetuate false notions, and that it is important to analyze and understand the negative effects of the use of such pejorative language. For example, the ludicrous use of the term vision teacher to describe a teacher of blind children, as well as the myriad other words used to avoid the word blind, cannot help but instill in young blind people the notion that it is not respectable to be blind, and to admit that one is blind should be avoided at all costs. Through the work of the National Federation of the Blind, the environment described above has not only been created, but is becoming inhabited by more and more people. What happens within this space with respect to blindness is fundamentally different from what happens outside it. As lives are changed, the space expands. Fewer blind and sighted people live outside, in the environment where the characteristic of blindness continues to be perceived to dominate all other characteristics. As the energy in the outside environment is diminished, the energy inside intensifies, and solutions to both the objectively legitimate and the emotionally illegitimate problems caused by blindness come ever more rapidly. The shift from classical Newtonian physics to quantum mechanics began slowly, increasing in momentum as the new theories proved reliable in explaining observations of physical phenomena and in predicting the discovery of phenomena previously unobserved. It is likewise with the new understandings of blindness that the National Federation of the Blind has brought into being. With increasing momentum, the blind and sighted alike are coming to inhabit the new space where the assumptions about blindness are true, and where predictions of the full integration of the blind into society on the basis of equality will become observed phenomena. When complete, perhaps the new paradigm will be called the Age of Quantum Blindness.